And now on ABC Radio National, it's time for Counterpoint, an hour of opinion and discussion with Paul Comrie-Thompson and Michael Duffy.
Hello and welcome to the program. In just a moment, we take a look at something that seemed too good to be true. Test scores in New York schools kept going up and up, and we were told failing schools are being turned around and students seem to be learning something. Julia Gillard, for one, when she was our federal education minister, was deeply impressed by this apparent great success.
Michael, she even invited New York Education Chief Joe Klein to visit our shores, if I remember correctly.
She did indeed, Paul. That was just one of the highlights of her long march across the political spectrum. But something wasn't quite right. Education professor at Harvard University, Daniel Koritz, joins me in just a moment to tell us why the testing program of schools in New York failed its students.
And as a counterpoint to the slogan shouting and hissy fits that characterise the climate debate in this country, today we present Bjorn Lomborg. His message is simple. Do you want to feel good or do you want to make a difference? And he says if you do want to make a difference, stop rabbiting on about carbon emissions. That's Bjorn Lomborg, coming up later in the program. Also today, Patrick Cook, with his take on what our American friends would refer to as the world of Julia Gillard, and those other cute and cuddly Antipodean curiosities from Canberra. But first, we take a look at how over a number of years, inflated test scores sent a false impression of success to students and parents in New York.
In recent years, the issue of testing school children has been much debated in Australia. The federal government, under then Education Minister Julia Gillard, introduced the My School website, so people could compare schools, on the basis of national NAPLAN testing in literacy and numeracy. Then Minister Gillard said she was impressed by the apparent success testing and comparison had had in New York under School Chief Joel Klein, where test scores had increased significantly. However, there was considerable media scepticism about that, which grew as the test results got better and better, and our next guest has actually been asked to conduct a review of the whole testing process and what occurred in New York. Daniel Koritz is Henry Lee Shattuck Professor of Education at Harvard Graduate School of Education. He founded and chairs the International Project for the Study of Educational Accountability, and he's author of the book Measuring Up, which is all about educational testing. He's an expert. Dan Koritz, welcome to the program.
Delighted to be with you.
Thanks. Let's talk about testing in general before we get to New York. What are the major benefits that you believe exist with standardized testing?
Well, standardized testing was designed a long time ago, two generations ago now, to provide teachers and administrators with information they couldn't get from their own observation of students. It was not designed and is not sufficient to serve as a comprehensive evaluation of the quality of schooling. It was simply designed to provide a specialized and supplementary form of information, and it's very good at that. It just isn't all that some people think it is.
Does it have any use whatsoever in comparing not just students within a school or within a class, but between schools?
Oh, absolutely, with two important caveats. One is that test scores tell you what differences exist, where performance is higher. They tell you nothing about why it's higher. So a school may have higher scores because their teachers are better trained or because the kids are more advantaged. It's very hard to know. The other problem, which is a very serious problem in the United States, is a kind of an irony that the more we worry about testing, the less useful it becomes as a basis for comparison. And that's because in the case of testing, as in the case of many kinds of performance measures, people find ways to game the system and to undermine the meaning of test scores.
Are there any other major pitfalls apart from those you've just mentioned?
Well, I think in some sense, ironically, it's a bit of a distraction. If you were to sit people down and ask them to enumerate the most important goals for schooling and then line up next to that what we can successfully measure with standardized tests, they don't line up. We can measure a number of things very well. There are a lot of things we can't measure well. And what's happened in the United States is that the attention on testing has, to some degree, blinded people to other very important aspects of schooling.
Just to take that a bit further, I suppose a lot of parents and pupils would say, well, you know, school ultimately for them is about a test. It's about how well you do in that test, whatever it might be like in Australia or America, that gets you into a university of your choice. And therefore, they're sort of keyed into this faith in testing. Is there any correlation between standardized testing within schools and your success in getting into university or college?
Well, yes, there is. It's not a terribly strong In the United States, in any case, it's not a terribly strong relationship, but it's very consistent. What we don't know, and it's I think a warning to other countries that are now considering test-based accountability, we actually don't know how much the increase in scores that has accompanied test-based accountability signifies some kind of improvement in readiness for college. What we do know is that if you take a slice in time, if you take 2010 and ask whether the kids who score higher are more likely to get into and to succeed in college, the answer is yes. The more troubling question for me is whether the rapid increases in scores that we're seeing actually signify better preparation, and the reasons to be skeptical of that.
What other reasons might there be for those rapidly increasing scores?
Well, there are a number of ways that people can game the system. Some of them we understand very well, some of them we understand less well. What we know clearly from 20 years worth of research in the United States is that very rapid gains on the test scores about which people worry, the tests that are used for accountability, very often don't generalize to anything else. So if you go into the same schools and give the kids another well-designed test of the same domains, what you often find is that the gains on that second test are either vastly smaller or in some cases non-existent. And what that means is that people have found ways to focus their preparation on the details, the often very unimportant details of the particular test that's used for accountability. Down the road, that doesn't matter. An employer is not, in our country, is not going to say, oh, you came from such and such a state. We'll only ask you math questions the way they're asked in your state. What matters is, have the kids mastered the subject that the test is designed to sample from? And the evidence is that in many cases, the answer is no.
Is that or something similar what happened in New York? I should say that for many of our listeners, I think New York, due to publicity in the past, is still regarded as something of a success story.
Well, something of is probably the right phrase. You used earlier the phrase apparent success. There's no question that New York City showed somewhat larger improvements in performance than the rest of the state. If you look at other tests, the gains are somewhat bigger in New York City. But the gains that generalize to other measures are far, far smaller than they are on the state test for which the schools were held accountable. What sets New York City apart in the United States is not that teachers were pressured to raise scores. That's ubiquitous in the United States. Three things set it apart. One is that it was one of the more severe systems, not the most. There are others that are like it, but the pressure was more severe in New York than in many places. The second is that the publicity was much more substantial than in many other places. And the third is that the press over time became very skeptical of the large gains that the city was posting on the state test. And that skepticism turned out to be warranted.
Why were those gains so large? Do we know?
Well, we don't know yet precisely what teachers were doing. What we do know, thanks to the openness of the state commissioner and the state chancellor of the Board of Regents, who've asked that I and others explore this, which is an unusual occurrence, is that the test is substantially predictable in many ways. And this is not unique to New York. People, when they write tests, tend to follow predictable patterns in terms of what details of content they sample, how they present things, what they expect students to produce, if they're writing, how their writing is scored, and so on. And we have now gone through tests from New York and a number of other states and found that these patterns are, first of all, to a substantial degree, predictable. But second, they're known. You can go into school districts and see charts that tell teachers, here are the aspects of your algebra texts that will be tested or that have been tested in the past. And people are spending a lot of money on test preparation materials that help them focus in on the details of the specific test. So when the federal government came in and gave a different test, a much broader test, the gains were vastly smaller.
Why were you actually initially asked to do this review?
Well, New York is very unusual in that the skepticism on the part of the press about the size of the gains came to a head at precisely the time that the state was bringing in a new commissioner and a new chancellor of the Board of Regents. And they asked a number of people, including me, to look at the disparity in performance between the state test and the national test, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and decided that the disparity was simply too big to be accepted and that it signified that something was fundamentally wrong with the state's testing program. So they committed themselves to trying to improve the testing program and asked me and other people to help them do that.
And that review is still underway, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it's underway. Mm-hmm. It will go on for several years.
Has anything like this been done in America before, and in the breadth of this particular review?
I think this one will turn out to be broader than we've had in the past, but we've had research going back to the late 1980s that looks at questions of this sort. The test-based accountability that you see in places like New York is the culmination of a 30 or 40-year progression in American education policy. And we have had now studies for over 20 years that have looked at two questions. One is, to what degree can you trust the increase in scores that you see when people are held accountable for them? And the second is, what are teachers doing differently as a result of being held accountable for testing? What we found quite consistently, though not uniformly, is that the gains in scores are often exaggerated, often severely exaggerated by a factor of 3 or 4 or 5. And the teachers report doing things that might account for that. For instance, they will tell you, and survey after survey, teachers have said, we simply stop putting time into aspects of the curriculum that we've realized are not tested. In some studies, people have found that teachers disproportionately spend time on students who are near a cut score that counts, because those are the only ones for whom they get credit. There are a whole variety of things that we do know about inappropriate test preparation. There's a lot we still don't know.
Dan, reflecting on what you've just been telling us, I've been wondering, puzzling to myself, why tests are so popular and still so popular with parents. They certainly are in Australia. Not just the testing, but the use of tests to compare schools. And I suspect one reason is that parents are always a bit nervous about what goes on in schools and feel they don't really know. Maybe they're not qualified to know. And they think that tests or comparisons may be able to make educators accountable. Is there any truth in that?
There is. But again, we're faced with this irony that as we increase the pressure to improve scores, we can trust them less. And this is not unique to education. It's been found, it's actually so common, it's called Campbell's Law in the social sciences, and it's been found in field after field after field. So what we need to do is find a way to make this kind of information available to parents and policymakers, and I think to hold people accountable for improving student performance without suffering the kinds of degradation of instruction and inflation of test scores that we've often seen here. And unfortunately, I think doing that requires a more complicated and more burdensome system of accountability than people have been willing to pay for in the United States.
Is there any effect on the students that have been through these testing processes and received the inflated marks and they turn up in college or university? Will it affect them in any way?
Well, I think it will. That's one of the dramatic things that happened in New York in the past year. New York, like other states, has set up a bunch of performance standards that are used for accountability. There's a basic standard, a proficient standard, and an advanced standard. And the expectation is that students who reach the proficient standard are on track to do well in whatever comes next. What was found in New York this past spring and summer was that the standards had become so low that students who were scoring proficient in the eighth grade actually had a fairly low probability of obtaining a decent score on the high school tests. And at the same time, students who were achieving passing scores on the high school tests had a relatively low probability of achieving even a C average, which in the American system is fairly low. It used to be middling, it's now fairly low, in college. So what's happening is that because scores have become inflated, students and their parents are getting a misleading impression of how well they're doing. They're getting a false message. And that's why the state decided this summer to raise the performance standards on the test, to require higher levels of performance, which in turn is what led to the widespread perception that performance in New York City was not as good as it seemed to be.
Daniel Koretz, a professor of education at Harvard Graduate School of Education, founded and chairs the International Project for the Study of Educational Accountability, and he's currently heading a review of what happened with testing in New York.